All right, we're recording. This is the November 2020 call that is recorded. It'll be in the Tennis Evolution Plus membership portal and also in the app. Hope to get that up by Monday. All things goes smoothly with my editor. But welcome to the call, and I got plenty of videos to go through tonight. So we're going to jump right in and jump right in here with these videos. Who are we going to start with first tonight? Let's start with see if we can get a new member in here off the bat. All right. So we are going to take a look at a video that Chin has sent in, and let's see what we got here. Again, as I mentioned, Chin, this is a 5-minute video, so we're going to just pull a couple of things that I see right off the bat with your fundamentals. It may not be the thing, but I always try to find those high leverage points and try to apply it to other people that are listening, you know, common themes that I see with players. So I'm going to get you back at the baseline. Let's see what you're doing with the mini tennis, because everyone can work with their mini tennis. All right. That's a nice swing there. I like it. Yeah, great swing. Can't tell if this is a coach or not. Maybe it's a coach. Good. Okay. So first thing I want to point out that all of you can work on with your one-handed backhand, and even in mini tennis here, even in short court. So the swing looks pretty good. I think that okay. So right here, I know Chen is small, but his hand, it's just above his waist here. So what I'd like to see is when you make that first move, look at where my hand goes. It's up around my shoulder. This gets me a big turn and it creates a little more space. So I think you're in here. You can get it up here a little more. You can lift your elbow and lift your shoulder and get a little more turn at the very beginning. So right off the bat, I think that can help your backhand. If you study all the great pros, you're going to see a big turn with the hand being a little higher. Your hand is a little lower. So that might be something to consider. Of course, when you start up, then you're going to have to drop the racket. But that would be one thing. And then when you finish this swing, and I saw it in the others, it looked real good, real solid. See how you kind of flip your racket back? You should actually just keep it pretty firm right there and stop. You can still create topspin when you do that. So a more firm, I'm going to tilt it up a little bit, a more firm swing, a little bit higher here. Right there without kind of flipping it behind. You actually did it on a backhand before, which I liked a lot. So again, what I just shared with you, if you have a one-handed backhand, these are common principles. You want a better first move. See right there, that's really nice right there, the way you did that. And then you kind of stopped the racket there. So that was good. It was just on the one after, right here, where you kind of flipped a little bit. Right there. It was a little flippy. So, by the way, it's not a be-all, end-all if you don't go up like this. So if you start doing that and it really messes you up, I just want you to have the vision of, all right, if I want to go 3-5, 4-0, 4-5, 5-0, and just keep improving, you'll see most the hand's going to be up around the shoulder here. John McEnroe's a little different. He takes it lower. So, again, it's not that you have to do it. I'm just going to stop real quick and make sure you're all muted over there. It's not that you have to take the racket up, but you could definitely consider that. So then on the forehand side, I might wait till you get back to the baseline. But let me see what I see on this one right here. And keep in mind, this is sight unseen. This is the first time I'm watching Chin. All right. So here's something that's really interesting for all of you to pay attention to. So when Chen makes this move right here, can you see how turned he is? And then when he steps, look at how he steps across his body. So if I were to pull up myself playing mini tennis, you would never see me stepping across like this. So if you're going to step in, you should be getting behind the ball, where when you step in, you actually are almost stepping in a neutral stance or even slightly open. So we want to avoid kind of that look right there. The other thing you can pay attention to, it looks like it's cold there, so the ball's not bouncing very high. But let me see here. It starts to drop. It might be hard to see, but the ball's starting to drop. So what I would like to see instead, Chen, on a ball like this is first off, again, your first move could be a little bit more pronounced. You could kind of get your off. See how that first move, your hands are in like this? And again, keep in mind, if your coach is teaching you a certain way that's different than the way I'm teaching you, you know, I don't know that yet. I don't know that information. But if he's telling you to stay in, that could be contradictory. But I like to get this off arm out away from the body and this elbow away on the back of the dominant arm. And it just looks like that elbow is tucked in a little bit and the hands are low, and you could create more space at the beginning. And then when you see this ball, what I'd like to see is when you move to this ball, actually what you should do is you come out of the split. Watch this. You come out of the split and then this ball is moving this direction. So you can cross over with this foot right there. You can cross over, and then this foot would come in front of it like you'd be hitting a run through. And so now your hips right here would be facing the net more with a very strong first move. So your hips are facing the net more, and you'd have a strong first move with your shoulder turn and your coil. But we're seeing the opposite. We're seeing, I mean, you do turn your shoulders, but it's basically because you turn sideways. So what I'd like to see is a bigger pronounced first move, but keep your hips facing the net more on a shot like this, playing mini tennis. Chen, I would study, not that this is a run through, but to study a run through footwork pattern where you're running through this ball, although it could be because the ball was dropping. Go to the Transition Footwork Secrets course and study the run-through footwork pattern. I don't have it pulled up tonight, but maybe next week we can actually go through it a little bit more. Just a little thing that can help you with your footwork where you don't get crossed up. Even there, let's look at that. And then I'm going to fast forward and get it from with the baseline. So when you're making this swing, that right there, everybody, look at that. That to me looks like a jammed swing. Look how tight that elbow is in. So it all starts, Chen, with your first move. So the next videos you send me, like right here, when you're moving around this ball, ball's coming. See, I can't see your offhand. Your offhand is in front of your body. It's your body's blocking your offhand. I should see this right here. So study my Topspin Forehand Secrets course. And really improve your off arm and your spacing. Another thing I can see too is the ball bounces and it's already starting to drop. So your goals, here are your goals for the next week and the next month. Space on the forehand and the backhand, little more space, a little more shoulder turn, okay? And then try not to let a ball drop, right? You're gonna be moving up through this shot with a Carioca footwork pattern or a run-through footwork pattern, especially when the ball is dropping. Just had to mute somebody there. I'm just gonna look at the questions that are coming in. Michael says, same high-end setup for two-handed backhand. So two-handed backhand, it's different. Two-handed backhand, I typically like, if it's a high ball, you can lift your hands. Okay, but if it's in the strike zone, I feel like you want to set the hands by the hip. You can cock the racket up, but you set the hands by the hip. You can study Djokovic on this, but you set the hands here and then you go forward. On the one-handed backhand, because now you don't have two hands on the racket. So two hands here, it's a little awkward to move your hands up like this and take a big loop. But on the one-hander, it's more natural to make this type of a move right here. It's not as natural to do it with a two-hander. So you want to put those, get those hands closer to the hips at the first move on the two-handed backhand. Let me see what the chat has to say. Bruce says, do you think serve and volley will come back in fashion with everyone returning from so far back, i.e. Rafa? I'll get to that question later, Bruce, but that's a great question. Okay, so let's move it back to the baseline. So what I just shared in the last 10 minutes, again, I know we're spending a lot of time on chin, but this is universal. This is what I see with almost all passionate club players, that they're too close to the ball and their first moves are not strong enough and they let the ball drop. So the nuggets that I just dropped here, and again, Bruce is on the call. He's probably seen it for the last 30, 40 years coaching. Not trying to date you, Bruce, but you've been around the block. I'm sure, Bruce, you see that a lot of players don't create space. A lot of players let the ball drop. A lot of players step across and get blocked with their hips on balls they don't need to. And so these are things that all of you now, when you go video tape yourself or go play, you could be aware of. Did I get space on my first move? Did I have space when I hit the ball? Did I let the ball drop, or did I try to get it at the waist 80% of the time? You know, sometimes the ball is going to drop. Sometimes the ball is going to get up high. But I feel like there's a lot of balls that players can control their contact height a lot better than they do. So let's take this back and see if we get you at the baseline. Awesome. So let's watch this. All right. So again, what I'm going to say is this is a pretty nice first move right here. And it doesn't mean you have to change it. This is not, I wouldn't necessarily change this on someone, but it's something to consider that if you notice, if you make this move, it looks pretty good here, but then it gets a little bit, to me, it gets a little jammed in there. But if you start up like this, then when the racket comes down, now you got that bigger muscle group, that shoulder helping you to create some space. It does look like you get nice extension on it, and that looks beautiful. So there's a lot of good stuff happening here. I would just say consider altering the first move if it's not too much of a change. Your coach looks like he just demoed that. He's doing a good job with helping you with that. Yeah, I think the next level, when you said you want to get to 4-0 and beyond, I think the next level is exploring that first move when we talk about your technique. You know, the thing to get you to 4-0, it might not be that, okay? It might be strategy. It might be movement. You can see right here, this is a little thing because I know you're thinking about a lot of stuff. This is where the racket flips over right there. Stay firm with it and just finish like you did on those other backhands, nice and firm, okay, for right now. There's a time to flip it, but on this ball, you didn't have to. Also, I think, Chen, we can work on your footwork to this ball. So if you go I'll make sure that we get some backhand footwork uploaded into the bonus section. I'm not sure if it's in there right now, but we can help you with your movement to this ball. You see how he crosses over. He crosses over, but he's still kind of facing the net. You either want to shuffle first and keep your hips facing the net, or you want to step and across and turn sideways on the backhand side. So a little bit cleaner with the footwork will help you. Again, probably not the thing that's keeping you from the next level. And I'm going to see if I can get one forehand here. He's really working on your backhand here. It's beautiful. I'd be really curious to see match play, which you might have sent me. There's another backhand. Watch this. So a little bit of flip right there. So see how your arm is bent and you flip over? I would really work on just doing that straight arm concept. More often. Okay, he was working on backhands there. So we're going to leave that there, Chen. That's going to get you started. That's going to whet your appetite. And then, like I said, next week we can look into some of the other videos that you sent me, and we can go deeper with some things. But this is a good first look at me to get my for me to get my eyes on your game. So thanks for taking the time to share that in. So Bruce says, yes, spacing is huge. Your beach ball analogy is a good one, as is laser beams out of the fingertips. Thanks, Bruce. Yeah, that's what we want to do. So Chen, if you can get match play playing sets so I can see where things are breaking down, that's actually a faster way that I can help you with your technique. Although the technique is great too. So they're both very complementary. Bruce says, looks generally good on the backhand. Could perhaps pinch the shoulder blades together on the finish. Observation from the Jurassic age. So yeah, I mean, yes, on the pinching. It all depends. What I look for again is that finish really strong with the dominant arm? So if pinching helps, then by all means do it. So thanks for chiming in there, Bruce. And let me handle your question about serve and volley while it's fresh and hot. Do you think serve and volley will come back in fashion with everyone returning from so far back? Bruce, I think the only way, and to the group, I think the only way serve and volley comes back is if somebody that really understands how to teach it gets a hold of a player that's open to learning it. I don't think serve and volley is going to really come back at a high level. I think it'll be used for variety. You know, you see Medvedev and even Nadal serve and volley at the US Open a year plus ago. Like you said, when guys are standing back, but that Patrick Rafter type, that Edberg type, it's not going to come back. If they start to quicken the courts, it would change, but they intentionally slowed the courts down, so it's going to make it that much harder. These kids these days, they want to win early, and you're not going to do that serving and volleying, so then you learn the baseline skills. So I think what we're going to see is a continual evolution where players can do everything. They can play off the ground. They can volley at the net. I mean, Nadal's a very accomplished volleyer, very skilled at it. So I don't think it'll truly come back, but I do think you're seeing it more and more because, Bruce, like you said, guys are standing back. Okay, let's move to another video. And let's jump into – let's look at Austin's serve right now. So I'm going to share my screen here. So Austin gave us a diagonal court today. Thank you, Austin. So also keep in mind, everybody, that when you're sending videos in, if you just say, hey, take a look at my serve or take a look at my game, I'll give you just a breakdown of what I would do differently, but you may have specific questions, okay, or specific problems to share. So right away, I see some things that I would do differently. I would do differently here. So what I'm going to do, and a lot of you who've been studying material, this will sound like a broken record. But the first thing that I like to look for, and this is actually going to answer Adam's question. Adam's a junior player that wants to know the steps on the serve. But the first thing, obviously, you have to have a continental grip. It looks like it looks like there's a continental grip there. So we look like we're good there. Okay. Index finger is spread. That's a big one. That's good. Possible that the hand could be lower on the racket. I see a little bit of a, I see the grip there. So maybe we could get that pinky finger down a little bit lower so you could hold it a little lower on the handle. That's just a little subtle thing that I see that can make a difference. So we handled the grip. Now we got to look at the starting position. That's a big thing that I always look at. And so bouncing of the ball. Okay, so starting position right here, where is the weight located? I see weight probably more on the back foot than the front foot, but it's not very pronounced. So one thing that I'd like to see, and this gets into even the stance, is if you look at, I'll pull up my video here. So I get ready to serve here. And as I start my motion, I actually unweight my front foot on this particular serve. Now I don't do that all the time, but you will see pros that do it. Marcelo Rios, Murat Safin. But I'm basically have my weight all the way back on the back leg. And I don't really see that with this video right here. Okay, so as the racket starts to go back, I see weight on the back foot, but it's definitely straighter than mine. So I think we could get a little bit more of a sit back in the back leg. And I think this, when we get into the move into the stance, this back leg could move over, back foot could move over to the left a little bit. Maybe not as far as mine, but it could shift back. Why would we do that? We do it because it helps with coil and turn, which you're going to see in a moment. As I release the ball, you can see I'm already starting to turn. Okay. Roger Federer, let's pull up him. Look at the stance and compare it to the serve right here. Okay. As he starts his motion, he hasn't even released the ball and he's already started to turn his shoulders. Look at his bottom. Look at his back foot. Look at the back foot here. So we want to slide this foot back so that we can get more turn and more coil so we can find this position right here. That is one of the big keys to the serve is to find that position. You'll see, look at this position right here. It's very similar to this guy's, all right? You know, the big difference between this motion and this motion, well, there's not much difference. The difference is actually in the bank accounts. So there's a lot more zeros in this guy's bank account than this guy right here. But you do see common principles in how we look right there. And so what I try to encourage all the players that I work with is to create some variation of this look. It doesn't have to look exactly like Federer, but some commonalities with the stance, with the first move, with the turn. And so as we watch this serve, you can see the stance doesn't really set up for turn or coil. Now, as you can see, he is turning his shoulder, so that's great. So he's actually turning pretty well considering his stance. But what you're noticing, what you're going to notice here because of the stance, and this is going to make a huge difference if this foot can slide back a few inches, now there's no more turn happening. It's really just the arm going back in space. And in my estimation, it looks like the arm is starting to become disconnected from the body because the body's not really turning with the arm. And now what's happening is the arm is starting to raise up and the arm is very straight here. Okay, so look how straight the arm is still here. And not a ton of turn, mainly because of the stance. If we come back to Federer at a similar place in the motion, okay, look at where his tossing arm is, tossing arm. This tossing arm is going out forward. It's not really going out to the side as much. His is going more to the side, almost like his tossing arm is going out to this net post. So there's turn happening, and this arm is bending to get into a throwing motion position. And we don't see that here. So the two biggest foundational things I would do is I would adjust the stance, and I would work on the first move with this arm bending. Because you can see now, at this point of the swing, the elbow is well above the shoulder. But you never see in Federer's serve, you never see the elbow get above the shoulder because once the arm bends, it finds that position. So we want to get that arm, ideally, if we're going to change technique, we want to get the arm to bend and we want to get into that trophy position. Now the arm starts to drop. Now this is a little bit like Patrick Rafter. I mean, Patrick Rafter had a very straight arm and a high elbow and then he dropped in. So you can make it work. I'm just pointing out kind of the principles that I would consider adjusting. Because there isn't a lot of turn here, now you're having to serve a lot with the arm and the shoulder, could cause shoulder or elbow problems, okay? You can even see the body starting to face the net right there, face the net before contact. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility in this arm. That's a huge bonus. The hand is below the elbow. This is looking great, all right? He comes up on edge. He's on edge, and then he squares up. But the issue is that it's a lot of arm. The body's really facing the net at contact. Let's look at the difference at contact, all because of the setup, right? Because of the stance. Look at the difference in the body. Federer's chest is facing more towards this net post right here or this single stick. And his ball position is above his shoulder right here. If we come over here, now the chest is facing towards the net and the ball position is outside the shoulder. This is all a function of stance, turn, and coil in the beginning. So it's like a domino effect. If you get the early parts right, then you can get this ball position over here. You can get the chest facing more towards the net post. Pronation looks amazing. Good job with the pronation. So again, there's a great racket drop. There's great pronation. looks like a live arm. I would improve the stance and the first move in that trophy position. Let's see what comments are coming through here. I agree with all the arm. I have some shoulder issues. Voila. Thank you, Austin. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You might be able to serve 120, but it's going to hurt. That bicep tendon and that elbow and that cuff is going to take a beating. So let's get your serve more efficient. Let's get you to turn a little bit more. Let's get that stance to adjust a little bit more. Let's get that turn and that coil. So in the Serve Fundamentals Unlocked course, you can study my, it's all in the start. You can study the 4-inch swivel. You can study my stance lessons. That'll go a long way in helping. Bruce says, do you think there are some mobility issues for his lack of turn? Do you think freezing at various positions helps learning different positions such as trophy? Yeah, so Bruce brings up a great point. Going through racket fit, there's definitely probably a stability and mobility issue at different parts of the body. And so there could be a hip stability or mobility issue. There could be a spine issue, the ability to side bend, the ability to rotate. A lot of times we need to open up the thorax. That's very important, the mid spine. And so we have to do exercises off the court. I do have exercises inside membership. Check out those injury prevention exercises to work on your mobility. If you want to improve your serve, you've got to look at it like, I'm going to improve my technique and I'm going to improve my mindset around my serve, how I practice my serve, where I aim. I'm also going to improve my body. All right. Erwin, good to see you here. Herman, yeah, Erwin Herman, yes. Besides Jeff's gold nuggets on tonight's call, I'd highly suggest everyone to work on shadow strokes to build new muscle memory of the correct technique. This advice also applies for footwork patterns. Totally agree with that concept. And as Bruce said, if you can freeze at various positions, and the one position I would be spending time is the trophy position. So once you get your beginning position and you move into trophy, hold that position for time and see where the tightness is, or go up against a wall and hold your, see how I hold my arm up like this, hold it up against the wall in that 45 degree position like this with a side bend, stuff like that. Those different holds can make a huge difference. Okay. Austin confides in us. Thoracic cavity is very immobile. Started to foam roll to improve that. Yes. And if you look again, if you look in my injury prevention bonus, there's breathing exercises to open up the rib cage. I just filmed about 25 new corrective exercises that are going to be released in a new course. And one's called the belly lift. And what I'll do, because you guys are gals and guys are so committed to this, I will drop in the belly lift exercise into the injury prevention bonus here. So you can start doing that, Austin, because if you do the belly lift exercise, you can start to open up your thoracic. That's going to be huge for your serve. It's going to open up a whole new world for you. Great stuff, everybody. Amazing. And again, what I just shared with you is what I see 99% of the time. Okay. I see stance. I see first move. I see thoracic mobility. I see turn, all of this. Okay. So this is the system. This is the framework. If you want to keep improving your technique, this is where we're going with it. Okay. Let's see who gets a little bit of love now. Let's see here. So Adam, I mentioned earlier, Adam said, what are the key components of a great first and second serve? How can I simplify the mechanics of the serve for it to become muscle memory? So as we just talked about, if Adam just watches what we just talked about, he can really develop a great first and second serve. I haven't seen videos of Adam's serve, but if he just follows the framework from the Serve Fundamentals Unlocked, if he follows this little excerpt that I did on how to improve the first move and the stance, That's what you should be spending the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months on. Awesome. Okay, where are we going next? Let's go to Bass since we're on the serve. We'll stay on the serve. So I'm gonna bring you back the screen. Ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. Thanks for sharing that video, Herman. All right, so this is Bass. He's been working with us for a couple of months on his serve, particularly his kick serve or his topspin serve. And he's a little frustrated with where he's at with some things. And he actually did a simulcast. He timed it out to my motion in one of my videos. And you can see it looks pretty similar. You know, maybe if I'm splitting hairs. So he's telling me how his racket wants to go up too fast here, and it almost beats my racket to the spot. You can see it's beat my racket to the spot. But it's pretty darn good. I think he's being hard on himself, saying he doesn't, you know, he's not there, he doesn't have it. The only other thing I would say at the very beginning is maybe, let's see here. I mean, maybe he could unweight his front foot a little bit, but I'm just splitting hairs. Again, he's in range. He's what the issue is that the racket's been dropping earlier than he wants it to. But honestly, I don't see a huge deal. I mean, what I would do is if he feels like it's coming up too fast like this, what he could do is send me 3/4 serve, and you're not allowed to move the racket until the ball is released. So you can see where his racket is when the ball is released and where my racket is. It's very similar. But if he feels like the racket is getting up here too early, I'd like him to do 3/4 where he just holds the racket right there. He's not allowed to move it until the tossing arm leaves the racket. This is the 3/4 serve. Now, he told me he's been trying to do this, but if he feels like it's getting up too fast, he's got to hold the racket right here down by his knees right till this point, and then he can go. So that's what I would do. But again, he finds a great position. Look at that. I mean, to me, that's what it's all about. You know, what he's doing right here is amazing. Now, what I would say to this is this is interesting. So if you see my elbow going up right here towards the ball and the hand is below the elbow, but you see when Bass does it, his elbow goes up, but his hand does not flip back as far as mine. So here's where I go with this. I think this is, as we just talked about, I think this is a thoracic mobility issue. And I think it could be a flexibility issue in the shoulder. So what I would do, Bass, is for the next month, I would do the bionic shoulder routine 3 times a week, 5 minutes a day. And I would do the belly lift and the thoracic rolling. And also another exercise is the thoracic rotation in the chair. That's also in the membership area. I would be religious about these. I would do these every day for the next month and see if we can get any changes to happen in thoracic and in the hand here, in the not having what we call a high hand. So getting that hand below the elbow. But again, because technically this looks great. I'm really pleased with where it's at. I mean, you can see the difference. You know, I'm hitting a kick serve here, how sideways I am here. He's pretty sideways. It looks pretty darn good. You know, I also can see that this front foot is going back and to the left, whereas my foot goes forward. So my guess is that now, Bass, your toss needs to get, and I think we talked about this a little bit before, your toss needs to get more in front. Okay, so that you're landing into the court and you're going towards the net. And then if I'm splitting hairs at the very end, you can see how you could bend your arm like I am, like that. But first things first, I would work on the body first. I would work on trying to get the 3/4 serve, delaying it even more. And then I'd work on putting a towel down and landing inside the baseline every time. I think I saw a question coming in or a comment. Okay, Gretchen says huge improvement from the first time I saw him. I agree. I mean, I'm sitting here going, dang, like we're on the right. This is awesome. Like this is amazing. And I think again, Bass is clearly a perfectionist, wants to get this, and he's kind of frustrated. I'm like, man, you're doing amazing stuff. I should try to find the video of him when he first started, but this is fantastic. And again, work on the body this month, thoracic and the shoulders, and then get the body, toss it more in front, and then see if you can get your foot, see if you can delay the hand just slightly more. But I think you're doing great. Awesome stuff. Thank you for that feedback, Gretchen. It's hard for us to see how much improvement is happening. So it's nice to have that, you know, that third kind of that a third perspective, you know, or someone else to see, wow, that's a huge change, to validate the player and even the coach that's helping. Okay, let's move on. Since it's in my wheelhouse here, just clicking on it. This is Bruce again. Can you talk about morning and evening routines? And also if you are crunched for time, for resources, how would you prioritize fitness training and which aspects? So let me start with the fitness training. So what I learned from Greg Rose, who's a performance specialist who runs Racket Fit and the Titleist Performance Institute, he says this all the time, and I think it's amazing. You should spend as much, the percentage of time you should spend on your mobility should match your age. So if you're 46 years old, you should spend 46% of your time on mobility. If you're 60 years old, spend 60%. If you're 20%, you can spend 20%. So that's a nice rule of thumb, that are you spending the time on your mobility and your corrective exercises that matches your age? The second thing is to really understand your strengths and your weaknesses. So if you are tight and stiff, you work on your mobility. If you're on the weaker end, you work on your strength and your stability. Prioritize fitness training. So especially if pressed for time. So I think what it is about getting little mini 5-minute workouts in here and there. So if it's 5 minutes before you start your workday, if it's 5 minutes at lunch, if it's 5 minutes at night, or if it's just a 10-minute block, you just get those blocks in. And what I like to do is I do, you know, push-ups. I'll do some core work. I'll do some single leg squats. I'll do some kettlebell swings. And, you know, you could get a nice little workout in. I'm going to put in my power cord. You can get a nice workout in just 10 minutes a day with kind of those staples right there. And then of course the corrective exercises. I do corrective exercises almost every night before I go to bed. And I do specific ones that I've gotten from my physical therapist, but I do the belly lift every night. I do something called L5S1, which is in the membership area. You put your legs up against a wall and you put your arms in a funny position, and that realigns your spine and your body, and you do it for 1 minute. So little hacks like that can make a huge difference. In terms of morning and evening routines, you know, especially pressed for time, you've got to find the things that fill your cup, that work for you. And so if it's journaling, if it's a short little meditation, if it's a gratitude journal, if it's reciting affirmations, if it's a visualization, whatever speaks to you, you do that. And if it's, you make sure you do one of those things consistently. There is a technique called coherence, comes from a group called HeartMath, and you can actually get an app on your phone called Inner Balance and a Bluetooth, and you can actually slow down your breathing and focus on a renewing emotion like appreciation, compassion, care. You can focus on something you're grateful for, and that can help you get into the zone. And if you do that a couple minutes every day, that can help you be more resilient and handle stress. And your routines don't have to be crazy long or crazy complicated. It's about finding what fills your cup. And honestly, one of the biggest things that I subscribe to is not necessarily a routine per se. It's more a way of being, and it's practicing practicing being aware of your thoughts and your words and what you say. And so if you can start to become aware of your language, how you speak to yourself on and off the court, to me, that's really powerful. That's how you can really change your brain and change your reality, if you will, or attract the right things in your life, because you're always speaking into existence the things you want to create. So always finding the positive in a situation, practicing that skill, to me is as important as a morning routine or an evening routine. But those routines, the way to become that is by practicing these things in the morning or at night. That's, again, where you go into journaling, or you go into the gratitude or the meditation or the visualization, whatever's going to help you be more aware of that state of being throughout the day is what I would suggest. Okay. Let's get to David. David's a new member. Welcome, David. And you sent in some comments about your game. And I'm going to read a couple of the things that you mentioned. You're calling in from Peoria, Illinois tonight. You're from Chicago, and you're here visiting your mother. The reason I mention that to everyone is because I was born in Peoria, Illinois. My family is from Peoria, and last time I was back there was about a year and a half ago. My grandmother passed away, and we went back for that celebration. And yeah, awesome to have you from Peoria here tonight. So David says, I've only been learning from your online coaching for just a short time, but I've got to say I'm loving it. I wish this kind of coaching was available when I was much younger. So true, right? If all of us that are passionate about the game had this type of access when we were younger, it would have been a lot better, right? What's interesting is that most kids these days don't appreciate this online that you all have access to. Of course, there are some, but I've worked with several students who do not look at my content. They only either come for a lesson. Well, if I give them a lesson, that's what they do. They don't study my content. And so that's kind of an interesting concept. But anyway, David says he hasn't really prepared any questions, but I wanted to acknowledge him tonight as a new member. So welcome. You all can welcome David as well and offer any advice to him on how he can maximize the time with us in the membership. But let's see. So I'm 6'2", and because of my height and good technique, I used to have a very powerful serve back in my high school and college days. But over the years, I've gotten out of practice, and now I need to fix my toss. It's all over the place. Pronation, timing, variety, et cetera. I still earn free points on my serve, but I also double fault a lot. So one of the things that I would consider, David, is kind of what we just talked about, is that as you get older, you may be losing some mobility and some stability. So maybe one reason you're not serving as well as you were in your 20s is that your body can't do the things it could do when it was 20. It's obvious, right? So spending that time on your mobility training, specifically the exercises that I have inside the membership portal, could help a lot. Also, when you mention I need to fix my toss, pronation, timing, variety, that's where I would want you to send in a video, because I'm not so sure it's the toss. I'm not so sure it's the pronation. It could be the timing for sure. But my guess is that there's something going on with your stance. I'm going to sound like a broken record here. Your first move, your trophy position, those types of things that then feed into the toss and the pronation and the timing being off. So the way I like to look at it is, can we fix one variable that corrects three or four other variables? And maybe it is the toss, and maybe it is pronation. But typically, I found that the toss actually improves when the stance, the first move, the trophy position, the balance, all in the rhythm, the timing improves. So just consider that. Would love to see your serve sometime if you're open to sending it in. I'm often late on my topspin backhand, and I often mishit it with some side spin or the lack of pace and depth. I need to hit it with more consistency, power, accuracy, and depth. So again, if I saw the backhand, I could comment. I don't know if it's a one-hander or a two-hander. But again, having the right space. And you mentioned it in one of the next points you make about keeping the head still. Most of us move our heads too much when we hit the ball and we move our bodies. So you can keep your body and your head more quiet. That could solve the mishits. The other thing I like to do is I like to have players become, when they do mishit, become aware of where they're mishitting the ball. If it, when they swing, are they making contact here, here, here? A lot of times people don't know. And when they actually mishit the ball and I ask them where they mishit it, they point to the spot and it's not the spot. So, okay, you have a one-hander. Great, David. So I would say, again, I'm not seeing what's going on, but I would say you definitely have to work on keeping your head at contact. That would be the first thing if you're mishitting. And really study my finishes, really exaggerate the finish. Now, you said you're late. So a lot of times when someone is late, what I try to do is help them change their aim. So if you're late, exaggerate missing cross court more than you've ever exaggerated before in your life. So your aim is going to start becoming wide cross court instead of just aiming maybe down the middle. That could be something that could really help you turn on your backhand. And I try to make it a goal with players. Let me share my screen here. So you see this tennis court here. If I'm warming up and I'm hitting my backhand on this side of the court as a righty, I'm going to try to make the backhand always land on this half of the court. So it's going to go cross court here. And a lot of players don't. When they're warming up, their backhands are all going straight or a little bit late. So you want to be training that habit of missing cross court as much as possible. My footwork needs work, especially in singles. When I don't recover after I return, after I return a shot that's been hit wide. Yeah, I'd love to see that as well. I'm going to leave that alone. My footwork when I have to backpedal on an overhead can be lazy, so resulting in some missed overheads. That should be easy putaways. Yeah, one thing I would suggest instead of backpedaling is you're going to turn right away. You're going to drop step and crossover. And I'm not sure if we have that. I think we actually might have that in the bonus section of the membership site. But let me drop a note and make sure we get the overhead footwork in a place that's available to you. My volleying is good, but I need to poach more. Okay, my return of serve needs to be more offensive and more consistent. I would look at the serve return fixes course for that. If everything else is fixed, I'd love to master the backhand overhead, topspin lob, and maybe the tweener just for fun. Yeah, I'd love to learn the tweener and the backhand overhead as well. Those are great shots to master. And, you know, sounds like you have an understanding of what you need to improve. But again, if you ever can get a tripod, there's tripods you can buy on Amazon for like $15, $20. You put it on the ground, you attach your phone to it, you put it behind yourself, and you push play. It can make a huge difference in if I can see what's going on. So Bruce says, I like to have people get their rackets stenciled so they get feedback as to where they hit the ball. Also, do you think Velos had the best backhand overhead? By the way, if you all haven't seen the Velos documentary, I just watched it the other night. I thought it was fantastic, and I had no idea what he has been going through to try to be acknowledged as the number one player in the world when he was dominating in 1975, I believe. So that's an awesome documentary. And I don't know if he had the best backhand overhead. I mean, you would know better than me. In 1977, I was 4 years old, so I don't really remember Velos that well, but guys like Rafter and Sampras, I think also had great backhand overheads. But with that forearm of his, he could really move the racket. All right, next, where are we going next here? All right, I'm going to, speak to, Gretchen right now. Gretchen, hails from South Africa. So it is about 3 a.m. there. David says, I think Fed has the best backhand overhead. You may be right. How did I forget to mention him? So Gretchen, South Africa, passionate coach. We've had some great exchanges. I appreciate her passion for the game. Obviously, showing up for these calls live. She could easily watch the recording. Sent in some videos of a couple of her students. So let's take a look. All right, so I'm going to look at it in full motion here. Nice live arm on this gentleman here. Okay, so the first thing that I would look at right there. So again, I don't know if this is going to make a huge difference. But if we look at the Fed here, at the very beginning. Okay. And if we pull up MyServe, let's see here. Where did MyServe go? Give me a minute, see if I can find. Lost my back view. Give me a minute here. Okay, we're back. I'll share my screen. Okay, so what I'd look at here, again, always the starting position. So you'll notice that Fed has all of his weight forward on his front foot. You'll also notice that he has his arms hanging. What is this promoting? Well, it's promoting complete relaxation at the beginning, and it's promoting this weight transfer concept from forward to back or back to forward. So he's all the way forward and his arms are hanging and relaxed. Now let's look at mine. So when I really get going right about there, I got my legs, I'm back on my back foot, and my arms are relaxed in there. Okay, they're not hanging because I'm already leaning back. So the two I like is Pete Sampras. If you're leaning back, your arms are going to be kind of bent like this. And if you're all the way forward, your arms are going to be hanging like Fed. So I feel like this player has too much tension at the beginning on his serve. So this, you can see this shoulder is elevated right here. So I'd like to see him get more weight forward on the front foot and the arms hang more like Fed, or start with on the back foot more and have the arms a little closer to the body. So the arms are bent and a little bit closer. You can see my shoulder here compared to this shoulder. This shoulder is raised. So the arms are kind of out here. Watch what happens. If I bring my arms in, my shoulder drops a little bit. We want the shoulder dropped and relaxed. So that's the first thing I would do. The second thing I would do, again, is I would look at shifting this back foot to the left a little more so we can get more coil at the beginning. Because you can see when this player releases the ball, look how there's no turn as he releases the ball. Look at how the tossing arm is a little bit bent. If you watch Federer, this is why you can start to see common themes. And listen, there are players that do it like this. So I'm not saying any of this is wrong. I'm just looking at kind of tangible things that Sampras, Federer do. Other players don't necessarily do it and they still have a big serve. But you can see the stance difference. You can see the start position difference. And you can see the first move position difference. Look at the difference in the body when the ball is released compared to this. That's what I look for. So most players don't start their serve as efficiently as they could. Look at my position when I release the ball. That's different than this. So some variation of Federer or Salzenstein or Sampras, that's going to get you into a more athletic position easier, get your body to work more efficiently. Look at the difference here. And then, of course, look at this right here. It's huge, okay? That's where I would just stop right there. I don't even need to see serving. I know that this part can improve because it's a domino effect. It's going to impact the rest of the swing. All right, so now the ball goes up. And I'd say that's the trophy position. If you remember what we talked about with Austin before, what about his arm? Remember when his arm was straight? We have the same thing happening here. So the elbow is above the shoulder. At no point is my elbow above my shoulder as I find my trophy. At no point is the shoulder right there, maybe it's about level while it's straight, but right here it starts to bend in and get to trophy. We don't see that here. So if you can slide this foot back, and then if you can work on bending this arm so that it looks more like this and more like this, I think you have a more efficient serve, a serve that doesn't rely as much on the shoulder. I would do a lot of half serves with this player. So we all remember this drill. I show it almost every month. But you start in this position so that the elbow's below the shoulder and you get to this position. You get to that position right there. That's a better, more athletic position than this right here. That's what I would do. Now he drops it in right there and gets closer to that ideal position, but the elbow is still very high here. He makes it work. He's got an incredible flexibility in the shoulder. I mean, if I wish I had that flexibility, incredible, world-class, professional, can't teach it, amazing. And then you'll see, look at when, so it's looking really good right here, but then when he goes to make contact, look, he's facing the net, just like Austin was. Similar, we're seeing a similar pattern here with Austin. And Austin says, I have shoulder problems. Rafter had shoulder problems. Look at my body here. See how it's diagonal towards the net post? See how this is facing the net? So that starts because of the lack of coil in the beginning. So again, we want to do the corrective exercises off the court, and we want to do the technique drills on the court. Let's see if there's questions. Yeah, the tossing arm more straight, for sure. Definitely. Let me look at another video that you sent in. Okay, this is from the side. So I will share my screen again. All right, so here we are from the side. He's got a live arm. He could have, I mean, amazing serve. I just like to see it technically get a little cleaner. Yeah, right there. So you look at the side, look at how high that elbow is and how high that hand is. This down here, yeah, I could improve, but I'd really work on that coil and that stance. Let's look at my side motion here. And you'll really see the difference here. All right, let's see what happens. So you can see as I toss the ball, my elbow stays below my shoulder. Look at that position right there. So he's doing a little more squatting, and you can see how he's lifted up his front foot very high. The heel is very high off the ground, much higher than mine. So he's not going to get great push off of the front foot, and he's going to have that high elbow. And you can see how he might not be able to side bend very well. Because you can see if when I stretch my arms up, I have my hip sticking out or my side sticking out, but his is almost going in like a squat. So that hip, the hip is not elevated really with this front foot here. So we got to get his hip position also, his trophy position where his hip tilts up, his front hip tilts up here a little more. And then I also get that elbow down the slot a little more. So that's what I would work on is that position. First is the racket position and the coil, and then trying to get that hip over the baseline a little more. You can see as I shift forward, his hip is still back, right? My hip is almost in front of my knee here. His hip is behind his knee. So it's getting the hip to work correctly. That's a more subtle, more advanced concept, but Gretchen, you've been at this long enough. I think, you know, seeing this, you can even see me kind of open up my chest. He starts to open it up pretty well here, but because the hip is not tilted forward and pushing out a little more in that trophy position, he's having a hard time kind of extending and opening up. And then this is called breaking the plane. If you see, because his hand is so high, look at how the racket, if I draw a line through here, look at how the racket crosses over. But on mine, if I draw a line, it just maybe bleeds a little bit over my nose, but not much. You can see the difference there. Look at that. So he's getting a lot of his power from his arm instead of from his body. And that could set up for possibly some injuries and inefficiencies later. You are welcome, Gretchen. Thanks for sending those videos in. Okay, Jean Ali, you've been waiting patiently. Let's see here. And Jean Ali, you can type in the chat box. Make sure I'm watching the videos you want me to watch, but I'm pulling this one up. Let's see if I am sharing my screen. All right, here we go. Gian Lee's been also with us for a while working on his game. Committed to a half serve to get the trophy. Okay. So when you're competing, this is going to be tough to like work on the things I'm mentioning. So this is going to be for the practice court. When you're competing, you got to do what you got to do. The first thing I do here is get the hand a little bit closer. Okay. It's a little bit far away. So you're a little bit tight. I get a little closer. Okay. That's number one. This is on the practice court. Number two is when you toss the ball, I'd like to see a little more turn right there. So a little more turn. Again, you might have to do some thoracic openings. You might have to do some belly lifts. You might have to do some thoracic rolling, but more turn right here would be nice. Okay. So that elbow, the enemy, get that elbow over here. Then when you go up to hit the serve, yeah, it looks like we got to get also a little more opening of the chest too. Right? So that's a more of a physical thing. But you can see how you're bending this back leg. We want to try to get that leg straighter. Okay. So do a lot of like pogo stick serves where you jump and you almost like click your feet together as you jump in the air. This is on the practice court. Right? So that's what I would suggest there. My guess also is that you might, I didn't see a side view, you might need to get your serve toss more out in front into the court. Just a little bit more, I would say. See what we got coming here. You mentioned your forehand. Oh yeah, you said it feels weird with your take back. Okay. All right, so let's talk about the take back. This is the first real live video I've seen. So the first thing I would look at is what's interesting, and I don't know if this is going to help, but you do have a big spread in your index finger. So it's probably actually bigger than I would teach. So I don't know if this is messing you up and actually creating more tension, but you might want to play with having the index finger drop a little bit. You do have a Western grip. So that's that might be complicating things with the forehand. It's tough to see like where are we going to go? Cause you said the backswing feels weird. The first thing that jumped out to me was the index finger. Somehow that's messing you up, but it may not be it. I may be just reaching here. And then the other thing I would say is, and I'll have to, you can type in the chat box if the backswing feels weird, but with your grip style, I know that I teach more of that low to high on the forehand as a foundation, but you may be better not going, I don't know this yet. This is just an idea. You might be better not going so high right there. with your grip style, you might be better like doing more of the windshield wiper where you turn it over and come across more. But I need to watch a little bit more. So if I got more videos of you competing with your forehand and basically when it breaks down, that would be helpful. He played all to your backhand that point. So let's see where you lost that point. I like to look at what's the shot that broke down. All right, so you hit the forehand. That was nice. Okay, this is the one right here. Let's go over backhand. Okay, interesting. All right, so let's see this. Good. Okay, so here's what I would do. I need to see what this guy hit on the next shot, but this is a huge strategy tip for all of you that I want you to be aware of. When you come over and hit this backhand, you got it cross court. It landed right there, and he was able to run around and hit a forehand. So let's see what he did with this ball. Yeah, he got you to run more. So your where you lost this point, assuming this guy has a weaker backhand, which I think he does because he's running around it, your goal would be to run over on this shot, use your left hand, and you might, instead of going so high with your swing, you need to almost go a little bit more across with your swing, and you need to aim for the service line over here and create angle and get it to his backhand. So this point, even though I know you said something about your forehand, this point is more about, can I place that backhand with more angle and get it over? This is a strategic way, and this is what people are saying, I want to go 3-0, 3-5, 4-0. Anyone who wants to get better and then they send me videos of their technique, it could be your technique, but it could be you're not getting that backhand that I just showed you over enough. And now you're on the run on this ball. And look, this ball goes back to his forehand. See, and look where it goes. So you're in trouble. So you actually lost the point on the backhand before where you probably thought you hit a decent ground stroke cross court, but you got hurt on that forehand that he ran around it. So you have to work on using your left hand and hitting angles. It doesn't have to be a sharp angle. It can land at the service line, especially if the guy doesn't have a great backhand. So that's the key right there. Let me look at what you have to say here. There's four messages here. Let me check this out. Do I have a semi-Western grip? No, I think you have a Western grip. Maybe rotating the hips earlier, letting the body pull the arm forward. Okay, so we'll look at that. Thanks. I read your email about the Tursunov strategy, not executing the backhand well. How can I know what grip I'm using? So yeah, again, it looks like you're using Western, but yes, the Tursunov strategy, I would just hit forehand angles as my base ground stroke. So against a guy like this, you want to use your left hand and you want to get that ball over. Let's look at the forehand again, because Gretchen said pull the hips through. So let's see. I'm, as many of you know that have been following me, I don't focus. Oh, this is the other video. I don't focus a lot on the hips pulling through, but that doesn't mean that that's not something that can really help. So okay. So that's interesting. So Gretchen, because she said pull the hips through, it made me look at this a different way. When you get around this ball right here, right when you hit it, you're kind of staying in place. So you actually get a little bit close to the ball. So I'm going to say it a different way than Gretchen would. I would get around this ball right here. And if you study my inside out footwork pattern, I would be hopping on this foot. See, you're not really hopping on the front foot. You're actually hitting it off your back leg, and you're moving a little bit towards the right here, or kind of moving, you know, kind of moving in place. But if you actually get on your front foot and hop a little bit to the left, you'll create the space. You'll create the space to let the arm go. So that's actually what I would do, is I would study my inside out footwork on this one and get on that front foot a little more and hop to the left a little bit. Hope that makes sense. Let's show your return. Okay. So point is lost where, everybody? Where was the point lost? The point was lost on the return. So one thing I want you to notice, and again, I'm seeing a snapshot. I'm seeing one point. But if this guy's serving a lot to your backhand or serving out wide, okay, look at where you split and look at where your outside leg is. It is at least a foot from the single sideline. So unless this guy is acing you down the tee every time, you need to be positioning yourself more to the left. At least have this foot on the single sideline or in line with it. And then when he serves right, when he serves to this ball right there, you've got to be able to go to it with two hands and hit a two-handed return and not reach with one hand. So to me, this is a positioning mistake against this player. He's got to beat you down the tee, left, right, and center over and over again before you should be splitting right here. You should be splitting with this foot on that outside line, and then you should be, you know, ripping two-handed backhand. So this is a positioning error. That's where you lost the point right there. And what I just said, again, this applies to everyone. I see a lot of players not positioning themselves correctly on their returns before the ball's even hit, and it throws them off. Let's watch another point from the ad court serving. More turn on this side. So we know that on the ads deuce side, you want to turn left. This looks good. And I would say get the toss more in front. Okay, get the toss more in front if you can, even if you're kicking it. Get it more in front. Now, I don't know what kind of a player you are in terms of forehand, backhand, but in a perfect world, you'd want to develop to the point where when you see this ball come back, just like this guy did, you're going to move to your left and you're going to hit an inside out forehand. You move to your right to hit a backhand. And then look where that backhand went. And so he's going forehand on you. So it's pretty tough to create angle, you know, from the middle here to get it over, but you still could work on hitting kind of a soft little angle that gets more over here. But the first thing is to try to get a forehand there. Okay. Try to get a forehand there. Let's see if there's another point I can watch. And then we're going to move on. Yeah, more turn on this side if possible. Okay, there's the forehand. Okay, so let's watch this forehand. We want to clear out this tossing arm here. When you're done, it should be clearing, moving to the left there. This guy uses the buggy whip on the other side. Okay, let's see. Your backswing looks pretty good to me. You made this shot, but I would have probably used a buggy whip on this. It was really dropping. But you handled it well. I think it's more positioning. So if you see where that ball, look where that ball bounced. Bounced really short. So you served him wide. It lands here. If I'm playing this guy, I'm just telling you what I would do if I was playing this guy. I would have made contact with the ball right there. So this is more of a recognition and reading situation. You come out of the serve and you see this ball and it's going to be a run through or an outside hop and you're making contact there and you're going to the net. So your eyes probably picked this up late and now the ball really dropped. So it's interesting because of the couple of the points you've shown me, it's either been return positioning or it's been recognition of taking this ball earlier and getting and using an outside hop or a run through, which is in the transition footwork secret. So I would study those two. So the next time you go out and play, I want you to be aware of when the ball lands that short, you're moving up and you're getting into the net. All right, let's do one more video. He aces down the tee a lot. Okay, so he caught you there. Interesting, because if you sent me a whole set, my guess is that he wouldn't beat you down the tee as much as that you think he is. But again, could be wrong, but I'd be real curious there to see. If that's the case, then he just beat you that one time that I was watching. Bruce says, do you think Do you think it is generally the shot before the shot you miss? Yes, generally it's the shot before the shot, but then people think it's the shot they missed and then they berate themselves. Like if they miss a low volley, they think, oh my gosh, my volley stinks, but it was really the approach shot. Or like in the case I just pointed out, he probably, Gina Lee might've thought it was the backhand after the backhand I pointed out or the chip that he reached for, when it was really the very first backhand that got him on the defense. Yuri says, a little late on split step return, footwork on return. Yeah, it could be. I didn't really notice being late on the split. It's funny. I don't always look for that. I looked more for the positioning, because even if you're a little late on the split and your positioning is better, you might be able to still pick it and hit a good two-handed return. But that's something something that I can be aware of next time around. All right, let's do one more video tonight. Last but certainly not least, I'm gonna take a look at. We're gonna take a look at. Actually, I take that back. We're gonna do two more videos. So just give me a minute here to pull it up. Okay. All right, this is for Mindy. Mindy, you've been so patient. And the video, I haven't had a chance to look at the email for follow-up. So I apologize in advance if this isn't the right video, but I'm pulling a video from October 23rd. And again, it might not be a right video here, but I'm going to point out. So one of the things I've been talking to Mindy about is working on her return to serve. So all of you, and we saw it with Gene Ali, if he can improve his return with that backhand, he's going to be able to take that guy down. So actually, good karaoke on the return. I want you to see something here. This is something we've been talking about, is if you get a low backhand, watch the footwork here. See how the leg comes behind? So she makes contact, and then the leg comes behind. That's really nice, actually. That's the way to do it. That's in my transition footwork course. I know there's a lot of strategy to doubles. I know there's a lot of positioning. It's important. But at the end of the day, you still have to be able to serve well. You have to be able to I'm going to point out something here. You have to be able to return well and hit your first shot well, you know, before even strategy comes into play. So Mindy's right here. Opponent hits a return. Now, my feeling, Mindy, is you don't have to move as much as you are. So I know you've probably been coached to move, but let me give you an example. So she goes, she's hitting the ball and you're already stepping over to the middle like this. I'm not sure you have to commit that much. I mean, when she hits this ball right here, you can just stand your ground and be maybe like right there. You don't have to come this far, because what if she hits an angle? You don't know where she's hitting the ball. So you're almost overcommitting. You can just hang right where you're at, right here. Now, if she hits the ball to this person right here, that's when you could like shade over right away and try to cut off the middle. But if she hits an angle here, you're now in the middle, and she did hit an angle. So now you have to really hustle to get over here. And this is the point I want to make to you, is that you moved over, and then she hits the angle. You only need to go to maybe like right there. So in my opinion, you overcommitted with your movement. So basically I want you to be shading, but I think you could shade less. So you could have ended up like right here. She's about to hit the ball. This is when you're going to split right here. You're going to split right there. And then coming out of the split, then you could move. You didn't split there. That was a nice shot. Just a little adjustment here, not a huge deal. But one thing to look for is like this girl lobbed it right here. And so now you see the lob and you actually moved up to hit it a little bit. And then you're making contact above your head, What if when you saw that lob, you split right here, split. If I see that lob right there, I just wait and I let the ball drop and I hit a ground stroke. So instead of hitting the ball, not when I say ground stroke, a swinging volley. So instead of kind of taking the ball up like this, I let it drop to my shoulder and I hit a ground swinging volley, an air volley. Just something to consider. The big takeaway here is less movement. And again, I'd be curious what Bruce has to say, because I know he coaches a lot more doubles than I do, but I feel like she's shading a little bit too much in both directions. Especially if you go to higher levels and players start playing faster, you don't have time to move as much. You just want to kind of shade a little bit. So this is one thing I would point out. Talk to Mindy about this. All of you can be aware of is when you swing, right? There's a lift. So it's okay to lift, but you should lift after contact. So there's a lift right there. So the first thing to do would be, you see this ball coming, you get around it so you're not too close to the ball. Right here, you see how this off arm is bent in? We want to get that off arm extended more, those laser lightning bolts out of the fingertips. And then when you hit that ball, even if you hop on your front foot, you want to do it after contact. Great job hitting and coming in though. Awesome. Good stuff. Cool. So we've also talked about the volleys a little bit. It's just a practice to be aware of. All right. So you hit this shot. And then when this ball came back right here, you were kind of surprised. You were looking forehand, right? So what would be interesting, Mindy, is when you get ready, what I like to teach is, again, Bruce may have a different approach, but I can see in your ready position, right when she's about to hit it, your racket is actually towards the forehand side. What I'd like to see is you actually have your racket towards the backhand side. So if they come to the backhand, it's a real easy move. Now, I know you have two hands. That's fine. Your ready position is like this instead of like this or instead of like this. So it's towards the backhand side. And then if it comes to the forehand, you just have to open up your hand and you're ready to go. But you're kind of defending your backhand here. And then you're going to step with your right foot towards the ball. So right there, you didn't step. You just kind of jumped in the air. You want to go towards the ball right there with your right foot. Even if you're off the ground, you're going to move with your right foot and step to the ball. I think this will really improve, though, if that ready position right there, when she's making contact, you're not like this. You're kind of shaded towards the backhand side. See what the chat box has to say. All right, David, thanks for being on the call tonight. We will have the recording in the members area. Bruce says, good comment about shading. I just wonder if she thought her partner was hitting down the line and that is why she overplayed the middle. Also, just an underrated shot in club doubles is short cross court return. Agree about ready position more towards the backhand. So Bruce and I are on the same page. Yeah, if she thought she was going down the line, then that would make sense. I just don't know, unless that's communicated before the point starts, that you want to be guessing ahead of time. So that's what I see there. Less exaggerated movement left or right. Let the ball drop a little bit on that air volley, the swinging volley. Ready position this direction on the backhand. And then the final thing is stay low on, don't jump as you're hitting the ball on the forehand return. Let's watch one more point. Well, that was the point. Okay. All right, here we go. I feel like I saw this point already. Oh yeah, that was the point. Okay, let's see, we get one more. All right, so same kind of thing. I understand the intention. So watch this. So return is hit. and Mindy's right here. She's moving forward. I wouldn't move forward so much. So what I would do is I would move to about right there. And then when she's about to make contact, you've got to split. I'm seeing you kind of just move through the splits and close. If she lobs, you're a dead duck. So I would just, wherever you're at, you don't have to close as tight as you're closing. Just split right here. And that's a good position to be in, right there, split. So you come forward and now you're too far forward. The lob is hit and then you have to turn back. You don't want to turn your back to your opponents. So at this point, you want to be backpedaling, keeping your eyes on the net man or the net woman over here. You want to keep your eyes on her because she's closest to the net. You don't want to turn your back. So you got too close, got a split step at the right time instead of getting so close, and then you're going to backpedal a few steps, keeping your eyes on the net woman over here. Okay, let's get one more video in, and then we'll wrap it up, and then we'll do our bonus call next week. We're going to look at Yasar. We're going to look at his serve. So Yasar is working on his kick serve and his flat serve. So what I'm going to leave him with right off the bat is the trophy position. So there's his trophy position. We talked about it earlier. If I pull up my serve from the side, watch the difference here. So this is the difference. We've got to get that phone booth. We've got to get that hand closer. I do more half serves, get the racket up more vertical and closer. Actually, the racket's in good position. We just need the hand in a better position. Ideally, we want to get this tossing arm straighter and we want to keep it up longer. Now, I know he's working on his kicker here. So that's why the toss is so far to the left. And that part looks pretty good. Okay, that looks pretty good. But I imagine it's creating a little strain on the body because the hand is not in a great position right here. So I would get that hand closer, try to get that hand closer. I would do half serves like crazy. So if you remember, I do this half serve like crazy. Get this position right here because that's going to create a lot of strain on the shoulder coming from here. Everything else looks pretty good. Again, tossing arm could be straighter. So if this is the trophy position, where did my serve go? Look at the difference in the trophy position. We call this the phone booth. So I'm staying in the phone booth. My tossing arm's staying up. Look how my tossing arm is still up. Even when I go to drop the racket, it's still staying up. When Yasar drops his racket, his arm is dropping. So everything needs to be up in here and closer. It needs to feel closer. The biggest thing is getting the hand closer and just to model this position right here. It's called ulnar deviation when the wrist is in this position right here and the hand is going to get closer to the head. Okay? Hope that makes sense. All right, we're going to wrap up here. You guys are awesome. Gals, guys, thanks for your contributions. Thanks for the comments. We have more questions to answer, more videos to get to. And what we're going to do is I'll do a call next Wednesday as well. So we'll send an email out on that and I'll do more videos and we'll keep rocking and rolling and helping you with your tennis. So again, thanks to everyone. Have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week on, I'm going to just make sure here, on December 9th. Okay, see you later. Bye.